Sometimes Forex trading can be a wild and woolly place to be. But Forex trading doesn't have to be the Badlands for you, partner. Instead, hunker down and bend your ear. You'll be burning the breeze in no time here at the Truth About FX Podcast.
All right, I'm very excited today. I have Gonzalo Moreira, and he is at the FX Street team. He's a trader, Forex specialist, and he's been trading for over 10 years. So this is going to be interesting to hear some of Gonzalo's stories from his perspective. I was introduced to FX Street many, many years ago. I don't know, maybe 13 years ago or something like this. It was one of the first really beautiful Forex websites I could find on the internet. And I'm really happy to have you, Gonzalo.
I'm very honored, Walter, to be part of this event. I've been following your work for many years, as starting being a user of FX Street, then being a contributor, as you have been, so for so many years, and finally being part of FX Street. And you surely remember when we met here in the International Traders Conference in Barcelona. It was very interesting, that edition, and we had great fun during those days.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was those were the best conferences. Yeah. So tell me how did you find yourself getting into trading? You have kind of a unique background. You've lived in many countries, and how did you find yourself a trader?
Well, it's true. My background comes from the artistic world. I graduated in fine arts. That was mid-90s. But later I switched gears and I found myself confronted with the foreign exchange market. I was working in a export conglomerate, industrial conglomerate. We were exporting industrial plants outside of the EU. It was a time when the euro was launched, and suddenly I was faced with currency risk. That was something that I at least on a personal level, I remembered from my childhood when we traveled between Portugal and Spain and then Germany, where we moved to. We had to change the escudos to pesetas and to Deutschmark. And suddenly I remembered that time when we had these different pricings, the different, you had these nominal prices for the same good presented in different in a different currency, but you had the same value for, you know, I'm referring for example for a train ticket, and in Portugal maybe you paid 80 scudos and in Germany it was just one Deutschmark, and suddenly it was already 2001, 2002, when I was again faced with what we call exchange risk in exporting activities, and there it's where it all started. I started to looking for ways to mitigate the risk. And when you start, this happens a lot, I think, in companies who have a more or less competent staff for managing risk, you start looking at ways not only to mitigate risk, but maybe to make a slightly profit on the exchange rate changes. And then that's where it all started.
Yeah, right. So in the beginning, your goal was just to hedge or to keep your prices under control, I suppose, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to recover an eventual loss. I was expecting a payment in euro, and I was paid in dollar. It was the time when euro was at 80 cents, the historical minimum. And I thought, well, there is a percentual difference in the nominal amount, which I wanted to recover back. And so I started investing in managed accounts, accounts. Later on, those managed accounts didn't work that well. So I thought, let's see if I can do it myself. Then I started learning a bit more and opened an own account and started learning. It was only later on when I started working for FX Street, when I thought, okay, now I have to go professional. I have to go for some standards. Being at FX Street, I was kind of an analyst of analysts. I had to filter the content. I had to filter the material that was presented to us. And so I went for the CMT degree, for the Chartered Market Technician, as a way to have a standard. You know, if someone is coming, you know, with a material for Elliott Wave, let's say, to check if that was valid, what the material was valid or not. So I needed some kind of a standard. And it was a time, you may remember, where there was this indicator frenzy time where many theories were taken from the 90s and the stock market and were applied to the foreign exchange market, and they weren't at all valid for this new market, at least in the retail spectrum. And many people at that time, working as mentors and on the retail sphere, were self-taught people. So you saw many of these technical principles being distorted somehow. And so that's why I chose at some time to go to be a member of a technical association and to go for a more formal education in that sense. But in the meantime, I have done been under the mentoring process of other people in the retail sphere. Yeah, so I combined a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So I remember when the euro was down at, you know, 78 cents, 80 cents, and I didn't really have access to any Forex trading books or information like that. I had to go to the stock book. So, do you know, as you mentioned, the technical analysis for stocks and shares. So I wonder, do you think you made an interesting comment. Do you think having that background, the CMT background, is that an advantage to know the quote proper way of interpreting, say, Elliott waves or, you know, moving averages or MACD? Or can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's an interesting concept, this idea of understanding the indicators as they were meant to be understood, or something like that. I mean, I guess my question is, do you think it's an advantage for a large chunk of the market traders, of the participants in the market, if you know what they're going to do when they see something on the charts? Do you think that's an advantage?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I share with you an experience I did when I was when I went for the level 2 in the CMT. One of the 9 parts of the study was candlestick charting, candlestick patterns and validations and so on. And I thought, well, that's easy stuff. I studied much deeper the other theories like Dough and I don't know what was there, Intermarket and so on. But that candle charting, I thought, well, that is something that I've been using for years. That it's going to be easy, that part of the exam. And it was the exam where I failed the most, you know. And I thought, whoa, that means something. And really, then I went studying deeply, all the subject on candlestick, on in this case Japanese, classical Japanese candlestick charting, and there was much more into it. And the same happened with all other parts of all other theories and which belong to technical analysis. I started looking at those theories and indicators in a different way, in the sense that I knew the nature of the calculation for each indicator or for each theory. So I knew at each time, or as a CMT, I think you are in a position to know, if I'm taking this approach, this theory or this kind of indicator or indicator suite, I know when it was created, why it was created, so what was the requirement behind, and I know the exact nature of the calculation. So I know that I will be looking at price, but I will be extracting from price, I'll be extracting a certain quality, a certain information. So I'll be looking at the indicator, but in fact, I'm looking at price or volume for that matter, if the indicator is derived from volume figures. So instead of looking at the indicator as a means per se, because then you can fall into the trap of signal generation and following the indicator signals, which is, as everyone knows, this stems from a time where you might have an advantage by having a PC, where most of the people trading the markets had no access to. And I mean, we are talking about, I don't know, 40 years ago or something. So there is absolutely no advantage. But if you know the nature of the indicator, and it makes things easier. And besides of that, knowing what to extract from price, you may even be in a position to stop using the indicator, needing to use the indicator that much, because you already know the indicator would look like in a certain price structure. You know, looking at price alone, you would already have a notion for volatility figures, for momentum figures, for trend figures, or whatever. So you are not that dependent on the indicator itself. On the other hand, generally speaking, as a CMT, you learn also historically how technical analysis started and what was the purpose of technical analysis as such. And there is this well-known adage, you know, the trend is your friend. But if you look at the classical pillars of technical analysis, the Dough theory, I'm just thinking of even candlestick patterns, which emerged in the 18th century, Elliott itself. No one of these classical analysts use technical analysis to just follow the trend. A technical analysis was a way to simplify information and to extract in the quality of prices. If it is time to go with the trend, if it's time to avoid the trend and expect a reversal, so to be ahead of the crowd, not just to follow the crowd. So in that sense, I think technical analysis has an inbuilt contrarian view in its DNA, which not understood if you approached financial markets during the 90s, it was just following the trend precisely. I had many friends who made a fortune during the 90s. Most of them didn't stop following the trend, so they lost everything. But Heritage, which we took to the foreign exchange markets in the beginning of this millennium, we took only the last 10 years of technical knowledge, obviating all the 100 years or more of foundations in technical analysis into the new century.
That's fascinating. So you think that at its core, technical analysis is sort of a contrarian tool, or can be?
Somehow it can be used as that. I think it's technical analysis in many ways is an archaic way to examine price behavior, and by examining price behavior, you are also examining human behavior. But if you extrapolate the price behaviors to other spheres of human action, You could apply technique analysis to many things, not only to prices, but you can even apply technical analysis in to weather patterns, to social movements, to to demographic data, to complex biological systems. I'm sure you could apply technical analysis to them, because if you just randomly generate data, sequence of data, you see the same patterns emerging. You see channels, you see head and shoulders, triangles, contractions, and expansions of volatility, and just by randomly generating data through a computer. So perhaps all the studies that are being done now in other disciplines, being it's driven from the social field, from the more hard sciences, will serve as a theoretical backbone to continue exploring technical analysis and to bring it to a new level, because really we can't just stay on that level to use technical analysis to follow the trend, because that's too small that scope, I think. This will need time. But I believe behavioral finances in general are serving as the theoretical backbone of technical analysis, and we are already seeing many advances in this area. I think you having this kind of academic background, Walter, you may agree to that neurosciences and psychology will offer great insights to things that we have been spotting with technical analysis for hundreds of years.
Yeah, do you think that it's because it's so part of being human, seeing patterns, that's a lot of what happens with our approach to technical analysis, because we see patterns even in random data? Is that something that you believe?
I believe we, as humans, we are good. It's part of our natural wiring that we memorize patterns and we detect them. The thing is, and I think this might be food for thought, we usually look for patterns in the outside world, in what we see. But I'm asking, what if you, as a trader, as an investor, start looking for patterns within you? What if you start looking at yourself as part of your trading approach, as one more indicator? That I think is the missing part, something that only few investors manage to have access to or to accept, such as William Gann, for example. If you study Gann, you have all sorts of techniques, Gann techniques, but there is something when you study Gann that you stumble like into a crystal wall. There's something missing there that can't very difficult to understand what he really meant in his writings. And I believe it's because he took himself as an indicator, something to observe, and he started looking for patterns within his functioning. This will be not part of my speech in the conference, but I think this is something that should be taken into consideration, especially in these times where so many models are classical models are starting to break apart, especially when in the traditional stock market analysis, many people are hating this rally that we have seen in stocks since 2009, and all the metrics point to an eventual correction that never comes. And maybe looking in the inside would provide clues as how to survive this market.
Yeah, a lot of clever traders have approached this in a similar way. They've looked at traders. For example, I've seen people do technical analysis on trader performance. I've seen a hedge fund manager I know. He tells his traders to quit trading after 3 months because he finds that their performance tends to trail off after three solid months. So they have a 9-month vacation. You know, these sorts of things seem to be creeping into the trading world. Is this something that you're using currently in terms of analysis of yourself or something along those lines?
Yeah, this is something I'm exploring. I haven't found exactly the way to integrate it, but it's something that has been in the back of my mind for a long time. And something that I'm starting to explore is through the use of financial astrology. Again, this will be not the topic at the conference, but this is it's something very new for me. I'm just starting to integrate this this approach in my trading, but. This is, I believe, what you say, what you have observed in many traders. I think this is a way to go, not only in the trading world, but in the corporate world. I think it will be very useful to be conscious of the cycles that we have as a group of people, as groups of people, as companies, as work teams and as individuals as well. Everything can be reduced to cycles, can be studied as having its own frequencies. And for sure, there are times when you can, for instance, extract more profit from leverage, for instance, and other times where you shouldn't. So really to profit long-term from the markets and to avoid to see your returns being affected during a difficult time, it's useful to be aware of those times ahead of time to prepare for that. And financial astrology is a great means to do that. Not only for traders, but generally for every individual. It's useful to find your trader profile, your investor profile, to find the channels and the ways you would be getting paid for your talent, besides of finding the areas where you can find your talent. And really, all this pursuit of money, it facilitates the right going into the right direction, because many times I see that we strive for money in the opposite direction, which does not go into all the necessary steps to reap the rewards from being it trading or investing or doing business, because we go counter-cyclical. We go the horses behind, no? You go in the opposite way. And these, in many cases, this leads to failure.
Right. So is it as simple as being aware of the fact that you have cycles, or is it truly linked to astrology? For example, like circadian rhythms or things like that, where people, you know, you might notice that you have a certain time of the month where you tend to be a little bit clumsy and you bump into things, right? So maybe, you know, you're prone to spatial mistakes during this time, or maybe there's another cycle where you're prone to mental mistakes or to overconfidence or underconfidence or these sorts of things. Is that really good enough, or does it have to be linked to astrology? Because I know a lot of traders will say, oh, I don't know, financial astrology, that sounds a little bit crazy to me. You know, that's not something that they might go for. But is it as simple as having cycles and looking at those cycles, or must they be linked to astrology?
Not necessarily. I mean, financial astrology or astrology per se is just a knowledge field, which is recently has been backed by studies coming from the study of physics and particles. There are a lot of parallelisms. But it happens a little bit the same as with technical analysis. You have this framework, which we have inherited from, in this case, from th- thousands of years ago, which has been transformed during the 20th century with the advances in psychology. So all the vocabulary used in astrology today is very much is characterized by psychological studies. But in the end, it's just a framework. And it's the same as when you feel hungry and you look to your watch and you see, well, it's time for lunch. It is not because the pointers of your watch, it is not the pointers themselves that provoke you feeling hungry. It's just that in your cycle, it is time to eat. In the same way, I mean, if someone says, well, I know there is Mercury retrograde now for 3 weeks, I must pay attention to fat finger errors, for example. It's not because of Mercury or what. In my understanding from the studies in parallelisms with the recent studies in our findings in physics, it's just that the cycles themselves, where we are in with our existence, are pointing to a certain potential. And astrology is just one means to get access and to put a frame into it and to being able to verbalize it, to explain it. But in the end, you can approach it through different levels. But it's true that when you talk about financial astrology, that sounds really, really freaky. But in case, perhaps conceptually switching gears here a little bit, in case you don't have the necessary timing tools to make financial decisions or trading decisions for that matter, because we must remember most of the technical approaches we have, such as pattern recognition or the use of indicators, etc., don't have a timing dimension built into them. Technical analysis, only the part concerning cycles, perhaps, has something to do with timing the market. For all other theories don't make use or are not good to time the market. In my presentation in your conference will be dedicated partly to avoid the need of being good at timing the market. So I'm going a little bit back in my evolution as a trader. There was a moment where I said the tools that I've gained access to through the knowledge I got are good at spotting price, at quantifying the magnitude of a movement, but in terms of timing, they are very poor. I knew that I could study eventually later on theories that would help me with that. For the moment, I thought I need to have a methodology where I'm not timing sensitive, where I don't have to find out the perfect trade, the perfect entry, and the perfect exit. And this will be my contribution at the conference, where we have developed a methodology where you can be in the market permanently, and you will be not in the need to find the perfect trade, nor will you be exposed to the loss of opportunity.
Right. And so is this the way that you trade at the moment? Is this one of your methods?
Exactly. I was deeply influenced by some people who worked worked as dedicated contributors at FX Street. You might remember at the same conference here in Barcelona where you were, there was someone called Richard
yep.
Olsen.
Yeah, from Awanda.
It was at the same conference, co-founder of Awanda. And he was one of my inspirations. In the sense that he measured, he found some scaling laws and ways to measure volatility in the markets in a very clever way, because we have several ways to measure volatility, we have historical volatility, and we have implied volatility through the options calculation. But he found out that you could measure volatility not in terms of risk, but in terms of potential. And this gives a notion of the length of the coastline of price evolution that provides you an incredible way to establish hypotheses how to capitalize on market movements. It's a completely different way. I remember at that conference that was perhaps the least understood speaker at the conference.
Absolutely.
But there were you remember. But there was a handful, perhaps, of people who had this kind of epiphany moment who said, wow, this is something really different. And I connected the dots with a previous conference we had. I think it was 2007 or so. I was not yet working at FX Street, but I attended the conference as an user at that time. And we had at that conference speaking Mr. Dirk Du Toit from South Africa. We had a very particular kind of approach to the forex markets. And there was also one of his students who just had won a real money trading contest. And it was interesting to see how 2 years later, FX Street organized another real money contest. And among the winners, there were, again, students of Dirk Du Toit. And they had this strange way to trade the markets. At that time, with my limited knowledge, I started or tried to reverse engineer their strategy, but it was impossible. Why? Because it was, up and foremost, it was a money management technique which was being applied. And this would be the core of my presentation. It's going to be about one side, as I said, the profiting from the coastline of what we called coastline of foreign exchange trading. And the other big part is money management, but not management as we have heard thousands of times in the retail world, where you see ideas like don't risk more than 2% in one trade, go for risk rewards of 3-to-1, nothing of that sort. It's money management understood as a critical layer of your methodology, so critical, so important that more than a trader, you are really you have to consider yourself a money manager. And in the foreign exchange market, that starts by knowing very basic things like what is margin, what is available margin, consumed margin, what is the pip value at any moment, how do I calculate my net positioning, my exposure on both sides, things like that. Then you start thinking as a money manager. And then you can really do astonishing things, like Dirk Du Toit's students did to win those contests. It was not luck. They were, technically even, they were really poor. And sometimes I started then evaluating a lot of traders through these lens, a lot of successful traders I've been finding, and most of them were in fact using a very strong money management approach, so strong that some of them, when reverse engineering their technical strategy, it was rather simple. Some of them really, really basic in terms of technical rules to enter and exit the markets. But the strong part was in the money management. Just to give you a few hints on a kind of elevator pitch, what is my strategy about? My strategy doesn't make use of leverage per trade, so I'm infra leverage per trade. I use risk to reward ratios which are 50 to 1, 70 to 1, so totally inversed to the usual figures. I don't use stop losses at all. I don't use mechanical stop loss orders. So all these kind of counterintuitive rules that you say, well, what is your aim? To destroy your account? But I've been trading like this for 2 years now on a personal account. I don't manage big money, not a professional trader in that sense, that I've never managed big funds for corporations. We just started here in FX Street in January managing companies' accounts using this methodology.
And you're doing that. You're one of those that are doing that, right?
Yeah, I'm the trader. Yeah, exactly. Right now, I'm the sole trader for these accounts.
Okay.
And but on a personal account, I've been using this since March 2015, with modest results, I must say, but very stable. And I've shared these ideas and this approach with many people along the way. And people who had better techniques than they myself, who have more dedication to exploit the market on an intraday basis, who have extrapolated this methodology into much better results than me. So I believe that by sharing these ideas with the audience in the conference, they'll be able to take their trading to a new level without abandoning their rules. They can still use their rules, be it pattern recognition, being whatever, macro views or news trading, whatever. By applying a different approach of money management, they'll be able really to take off with their strategy. At least is what I saw in the people that I've been sharing this with. And right now, we are sharing this really only in very measured amounts and with limited audiences, because I've found out that this is very sensible information that we are sharing here, these approaches in FX Street, only in the premium area. And I'll be sharing this with your audiences as well, because I think that the approach is just great. This is a conference made by traders for traders, and I think the synergies that can come out of this conference can be absolutely amazing, because I've watched some of the recordings, and we will have so many different profiles that combined, I think users will just take off after attending the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's fascinating. So it's a layer of money management. You lay over sort of any trading system, and you found it to work quite well. So I wonder, if is this one of those things where you just think, I can never go back to trading the old ways? Is that where you're at now? You just feel like you will always trade this way?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. It has to do also with the fact that after many years, you eventually find the way to trade that really fits your character, your approach to markets and to life, generally speaking. No, it was my case, but because I have seen this, as I said, replicated in other people, I thought this is not something that particular with my way to see things, but this is really a practical way to approach forex markets. Because let's face it, the foreign exchange market, although it is being considered as another asset class, as we could have bonds or stocks or commodities, it's a kind of different animal. Because also in the way it behaves, we must think that when we see an exchange rate, in fact, technically, it's a ratio. You are measuring one currency in terms of another. This, in technical analysis, is a relative strength study. And you can do this by taking gold and silver and do a gold-silver ratio. Or you can do a ratio between stocks and bonds and see which one is outperforming. And the ratio itself behaves much in the same way as a price chart. You can apply technical rules to it. You can plot an indicator, an oscillator. You can draw trend lines and such. But essentially, the forex market are ratio studies, and ratio studies don't have this upside bias, which may have a stock index or a single stock. In any case, it would behave somehow similar to a commodity, because that is something material translated into a currency. Yeah? And that makes the foreign exchange market something really different from other asset classes. And by understanding this, oscillating behavior, this is where you can really extract a lot of potential from these up and downs in its price behavior. If you look to a long-term chart of any currency pair, you will see that it differs from stock markets in the way that they have been in ranges for decades sometimes. So what does this mean in terms of trading? This kind of oscillating nature, this is something that we will look to exploit.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. It makes perfect sense. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to your presentation. Is it fair to say, and I know I'm trying to crack the code here, but is it fair to say that, because you were talking about the potential volatility, or you know, a way of looking at volatility in a different way, linking back to the Olson talk, is this ratio somehow linked to potential volatility, or is that something different?
The concept of coastline which Olson adopted is in fact something that came from the mathematical world. When you measure the coastline in a map, first, to measure the coastline, you have to previously adhere to a distance from which you are observing that coastline. Yeah? Because if you go on site and start measuring the coastline, walking through the coastline, you will get, for the UK coast, for example, you would get a measure which would go several times around the planet, because you would be measuring it on the ground. If you establish a threshold a priori, then you have a standardized measure of the coastline, which you can apply to all other coasts. And the same way, if you watch price as it would be a coastline, it is different if you measure it in thresholds of 10 pips, in the case of foreign exchange market, or 20 pips, or 100 pips, similar to the way we construct point and figure charts.
Point and figure, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, yep.
Exactly, and this is where, by the way, it becomes interesting to know a little bit of classical technical analysis, because you recognize concepts. And let's say if I start measuring all those price movements of a currency pair in terms of 50 pips, let's say, the euro-dollar in the last year in terms of 50 pips. 50 pips, it has moved in one direction without reversing 50 pips in the opposite. Yeah? You start measuring how many 50 pip movements were there. And then compare this with the price range. Maybe you got a price range which is, I don't know, in the last year, 1,000 and something, 1,300 pip maybe. But how many pips in terms of 50 pip movement do you got? You got, maybe you got like, I don't know, 50,000? So compare the volatility measured in terms of high and low, and compare it volatility measured in terms of coastline. And suddenly you realize this type of volatility measure is not about risk, it's about potential. It's about potential. The risk would be to know how far it can go in terms of historical ranges. But this way to measure the coastline gives you a potential. And you start thinking, wow, in 1 year, 50,000 pip, can I extract 1% of 50,000 pip? And suddenly, this hypothesis starts becoming realistic, because it's not the same to capture the whole potential of uh, of 1,000 and few pips, the whole range of extracting just 1% or 2% of the coastline, which becomes much more realistic. So yeah, capturing 1% of the price movement wouldn't be that difficult. And this is what, in my statistics and my trading show that my win rate is about 95%.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Obviously, I have to deal with the other 5%, which are floating in negative. And that is what we will be discussing. That's the core idea.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It reminds me, I used to trade a system where we would trade, like, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, and you don't have to tell me. I'm looking forward to your talk anyway at the event. But I used to trade a system where it was a grid, so we would push through the grid and the grid would reestablish, but then we had options to cover the downside. So we still had risk, but, you know, because you would get stuck with these positions that you had to hold for a long time. I don't know if that's what you're getting at here, but it's fascinating to hear you talk about this, because it kind of reminds me of that. And I'm really looking forward to your talk, Gonzalo. This is a very interesting thing. So does this guy in South Africa, this Dirk, what's his name? Dirk
Dutois. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does he offer FX Street webinars as well, or is he not associated with FX Street?
From time to time, especially when we talk about things like margins and the use of leverage, we ask him to contribute, because in that matter he's really an expert, and he's also very good at on the macro level in interpreting the macro dimensions in the foreign exchange market. So he blended kind of grid trading, as you just mentioned, with macro analysis and a money management which is very particular to his method. And in the money management part, it inspired me also to build this method. I do collect macro information and do my long-term evaluations and such. I do that for sure. But my approach is, although I trade very short-term, I might be scalping if I have the time, and I might be spend the day scalping the markets, or if not, having a very short-term approach in terms of order execution. But my views are really long-term as well, because you have to deal with those floating positions I've just mentioned, and this requires also a long-term view. So it's a combination of short-term and very long-term approach in terms of analytical skills as well. Yeah,
it's fascinating. That's really looking forward to your talk. This is really piqued my interest. So just to wrap up here, Gonzalo, is there anything else that you want to leave us with before we see you at the event? Is there anything else? This is a fascinating discussion.
thank you. Well, my aim by participating in your conference is twofold. I want to meet the people that will be attending and speaking, because I think there is a huge potential in there. And what I can offer, and my aim is, my intention is to offer a potential for those listening to what I have to share, which eventually will become something positive in their careers as traders. I can't assure that this will fit your methodology, but this is at least my intention, to offer you a future potential, which you can make it your own if you wish, and transform your trading for the better. I have done this in the last years. When I started trading this methodology in 2015, just before, I spent a year paper trading it and making calculations and so on. And after that year, I remember we did a meetup here in at FX Street. There were like 20 people or so attending the webinar. And for many people, or for few people, I should rather say, because we weren't that many, attending that presentation, which, by the way, I repeat, lacked real results, whereas now in London I'll be presenting real money results. At that conference, already were people impacted by the concepts and transformed the way they trade. And nowadays they are much better than me. I mean, and I believe the people in your conference, many of them, if they take the and incorporate some of these ideas into their trading, they'll be probably much better than myself. And I just hope not to ruin the track record in the remaining time, or at least if I ruin, I have a good explanation for that. And
yeah, that's funny. You're being very modest. I'm sure you'll be fine. Yeah, that's funny.
In any case, I think it will be of interest to collaborate.
That's great. That's awesome. Thanks so much for your time, Gonzalo. And I'm really looking forward to your presentation. This is a fascinating topic. I can say that I'm very looking forward to this, and I think it's going to be transformative. So this is excellent stuff. Thank you so much for sharing this with everyone at the conference. I can't wait.
Thank you, Walter. And thank you very much for everyone listening. And see you soon in London.
See you soon. Okay. Thanks. Bye.